Michael has joined us, so I'm going to say, hey, welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that we're together once again as we work toward understanding and developing this Aramaic mindset. And we had a question that came in, and so I want to share the question and then give some thoughts on it. And again, the whole objective at this stage in what we're doing, actually for everything we've always done, but it's become more pointed with this series that we're doing on the Enlightenment book, is we want to support people in having the brain cells to have a mindset that would be the mindset that Yeshua was speaking about when he spoke. In particular, we'll talk about that in a few minutes in the Beatitudes. But how to get the mind into the proper place, the rules, the guardrails to keep it on track when it can be so easily misled. And so the question is actually a political question, and I want to stay away from politics, but it also addresses, or at least to me, to get to the Aramaic mindset, it addresses how to properly stay in tune with who we are as human beings. And so the question is addressed to brain shifters, which is cool. If we were to speculate that the final national election candidates in November were two people that they're talking about without getting into names, which of the two, in your view, is more leaning toward the way of love? Well, my first offering on that would be, Yeshua says, the power of life and death is in your words. The Aramaic Yeshua says that the frequencies of vibrations you set up with your voice will determine your physiology and what happens in the world around you. So I think it's a pretty simple, without getting into personalities and all of that, it's pretty simple to look at, you know, look at the mass of words that each candidate you're thinking about speaks, which one is speaking words that reflect the condition of love, or as close to a condition of love as possible, and which one is reflecting words that are based in hostility or fear. You don't need to know more than that. You know, the whole political game, you don't need to know more than that. I can remember one particular candidate that's been around for a while now, and I can remember the day that he announced his candidacy, and I had never heard of him before, didn't know who he was. And they announced his candidacy, I posted on my Facebook page, who would vote for this? The language was so, I mean, just the words. I didn't know anything about his policies or anything about anything. You just have to look at the words. And so that would be my take, is just look at the basis of their speech, and you know what's going on in brain cells. And then, if the question, or the next question is, if neither, then what's your take on not voting? Well, actually, that takes us into a really interesting passage in the Aramaic Beatitudes. And so I'd like to open a little space around the idea of the Beatitudes. And in Aramaic, the Beatitudes are not as they are presented to us, at least as I understood it, in the Greek translation as, it's a nice philosophy to live by. The Aramaic Beatitudes are actually a set of instructions. Just like, you know, we talked about what people call the Lord's Prayer isn't a prayer. It's an instruction set. So what's the instruction set aiming for? What are the Beatitudes instructing you to do? Well, the first word in each of the Beatitudes, the Greeks tell us, is blessed are they. And in Aramaic, the word is, it's a three-part word, it's tuvehun. It takes a whole paragraph to decode the word tuvehun from the Aramaic. But this word that comes before each of the Beatitudes points to what the instruction is about. So tuvehun in Aramaic, best translation I can come up with, is the Creator implanted in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they are active. Yes, they understood neural structures back then. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. So the Beatitudes are a set of instructions for how to activate the neural structure that's indicated in the word Tuvegun. So there's an underlying set of brain cells that come as part of the package for us as human beings. And when that's active, then what this word Tuvegun says is that this mindset or neural structure in you designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being, that will be what's active in you. It speaks of, in the word to you, and it says that guidance system is latent. That is, it's unconscious, it's hidden, it's buried. And each of the Beatitudes goes through several things, and as the work with the Enlightenment book unfolds, we'll cover more of this. But I want to go to the number 8. Pardon me, number 7. And this the Greek historical interpretation of these words, and believe me, what you hear from the Greek is not a translation in any way, shape, or form. It's an interpretation. But basically what it says, according to the Greeks, is blessed are the peacemakers, they shall be called the children of God. Right. So let's hear what it says in Aramaic. You who, and then the Aramaic word is abde. The word abde speaks of working effectively and then the Aramaic word is lama. Effectively to produce the peace and understanding under in accord with the Creator's will, you shall be called the children or the offspring of the Creator. So for me, that beatitude directly relates, Audrey, to your question. Should I not vote, or what's my take on not voting? So you've asked the question about which candidate is going to bring about results in harmony with the highest truth, I would say, or you use the words the way of love. And my offering would be, if your perception is neither of them does, then under the Aramaic rules for governing the mind, it becomes your job to, through service, work effectively to produce that space of love. So I don't think not voting is an option. You'll get what you deserve if you don't participate in the game. And my offering would be, perhaps this would be, if you decide it's an either, which you know, perhaps implies, I'm not sure, but if it implies that neither, then perhaps it's time to get out and, through service, work effectively to produce the peace and understanding uttered in accord with the Creator or love's will. So that would be my offering in that regard, is look at the language and just look at the massive language. You don't even have to listen to anything other than the language. Listen to the mass of the language and you know which one's going to produce a result that's in harmony with love, or at least the closest result possible. And then if you decide that neither is worthy, my offering would be time to go to work. So that would be my input on the question about what should we do about voting. And that's one of the Beatitudes in the whole series of the Aramaic Beatitudes. And Miss Jeannie, I wonder if that arouses any thoughts or questions for anybody. We're out there in listener land. Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And if you have a question, push one, that raises a hand, and we'll be having a conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, push one, let's talk about it. Did that answer make sense? Yes, Miss Jeannie.
We have a hand up, and I believe it's Miss Susan, 610.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
You're on the air.
Well, Michael.
Welcome, youngin.
That was a fantastic response. Excellent. And I love that you hacked it right into the attitudes, because I haven't had the stuffing or whatever it takes, the discipline, the focus, to take the time to live with the attitudes, to understand them. But having them applied in a situation like this, terrific. It was terrific. Great answer. Very strange.
Yeah, see, that idea of...
What?
What's that? That's my service. What I post is my service.
Okay. I was talking and you were talking. So I'll be quiet. And you say what you were going to say. I missed it.
For me, this is one of the most important parts of the Beatitudes. I mean, there's some powerful stuff in the rest of them. But this one that says... you're required to do service. And to me, it's like, that's the rent we pay for getting to be on earth and have a human form to express through, as mm-hmm. opposed to going out and satisfying all of our wishes. That's the rent we need to be paying, is that service. And make sure that it's in harmony with bringing forward the active presence of love of human life.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that that would lead to a wise and loving answer, when obviously at this point, the asker of the question hasn't come to that. So that's something you can do when you're stuck. And it's wonderful that that will unstick us.
Yeah, when you start realizing there's work to be done, not only internally, but externally. This yeah. To me, this particular beatitude guides us that there's some external work to be done, too. Better get off our mm-hmm. dust.
Yeah. Well, I was making a wisecrack about some of your posts on Facebook are a little more, visceral or something. But this, for the radio show and your purposes here, is an excellent answer. And that isn't the reason I pressed one. I pressed one right at the beginning just to say, and maybe you know this, that Podbean is accessible on the computer. I didn't know that, but
yes.
A lot of people have been having phone trouble, connectivity trouble, and that may wipe out computers too. But if it's just, you know, you're using, say, Verizon on your iPhone and you have a different connection to the computer, we can access it on the computer.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't
yes.
know that. So.
Yeah, cool. Well, and to address more of your earlier statement, yes, many of my posts on Facebook are very purposely visceral. And mm-hmm. visceral because those who are carrying out instructions based in insanity, in rage, in harm, in viciousness, mm-hmm. are visceral. And mm-hmm. I happen to have three granddaughters that are at very yeah. tender ages. Mm-hmm. And when I look at what's being done to women mm-hmm. under this political system at this point, I choose to be visceral with those who only understand visceral. And attempting to get their attention to look and say, is it time to really pay attention to what you're doing? Because, mm-hmm. you know, once one's in block to truth, the most hellacious rage can seem to be the loving thing to do to someone who lives in repressed hostility and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping that wake-up call will resonate that visceral part in people and give them an alternative thought.
and I understand that, and I want to ask a question about that. We had our support group yesterday, and that topic, that political topic, came up, and one person said, you know, even that person is calling for love and help. And another person said, maybe so, but that isn't where we need to focus now. Because I don't think that person at this point in this body, on this planet, is receptive to a loving approach. But everyone who's listening to that person, maybe. And we've got to really be open, listening, and creative and loving toward those people to draw them out of the fear that has put them in this place where they're going to follow this person. And I thought that was an interesting, great answer. But I also wondered if the person who seems to be the head of all this really is beyond reach of love now. Of course, nobody could say that.
I don't believe so. No, not at all.
You don't think so? Okay.
Someone who's using the kind of language that's being thrown around, again, not naming any names, but the kind of language that's being thrown around in our culture is, to me, in such deep pain, such horrendous pain. And yes, all painful screeds are a call for love. But I think that first, it's kind of like that old thing, the donkey, you know, you got to get their attention. And that's, to me, where the visceral posts come in of confronting this. Look at this. Pay attention to what you're doing. And, you know, I mean, before I post anything of a visceral nature about any of what's going on in the culture, I tap into, and along with it, I'm holding a space and sending the direct active presence of love as deeply as I can, and working on and forgiving anything else that's moving in me so that I can post accountability, post the truth about what's being done, and still be connected to the place of love when a lot of what's being done is just filled with rage and hatred and vengeance and just plain good old-fashioned fraud.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's true. And alarmingly, I've been listening to certain feeds on the other side, partly because I want to hear that, and knowing full well that the other side is also reacting in kind, not the kind of conscious visceral response you have, but actually playing the same game of being one particular podcaster that I'm not going to watch anymore. Very short clips of the latest news. You can find them all over on YouTube. One young man makes fun of the other side, the person leading the other side. Bodily
sarcasm.
Sarcasm also just dragging out physical weaknesses on the other part, bodily functions, malfunctioning, making fun of that. And I think that only makes the problem worse. And I've been trying to figure out how I could say, hey, what are we doing? Let's stop this kind of thing. I wish they all were listening to your show. I mean, I think I do know what to say. I just, sometimes they have a slot for comments and I could say something. But I'm just
put it in there.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the word sarcasm means to tear flesh. And the person who's using the sarcasm does not know that they're tearing their own flesh and that that's where their pain comes from.
Yeah.
They think the pain comes from, quote unquote, what they think of as the other side. But their pain comes from the literally, I was actually, there's a person here that I do process work in exchange for massages. And today I was left on the table for a few minutes by myself, and I played a piece of music that I really, really tapped into from AGT. And I noticed as I was laying face down on the table with my face in a face cradle, and I was kind of singing along with it, and I've never felt so deeply before how the resonance of my voice moves through literally my whole viscera, my chest, my heart, my lungs, my liver, I'd never really felt that before. Today, laying face down and just kind of, you know, I was alone in the room and just singing along with this piece of really powerful, beautiful music, and realizing, you know, the cymatic effect, the effect that our own voice has in instilling frequencies into tissue and literally changing the state of the organized tissue.
Absolutely.
So it is powerful, and starting to look at and pay attention to the impact of our own words on our own physiology and chemistry. It's like that's really important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you, young lady.
Huh.
We'll keep holding the space until the game is shifted into a place where it's safe for all trauma to be processed. I was processing with someone recently who had gone to visit some friends in a kind of an outlying area of the country, you know, kind of backwoods area of the country. And they were talking about, you know, they were a city person and fairly up to date, you know, sort of doing their work. But the way they describe going into this backwoods community, and you know how this uncle and that aunt and this cousin and I mean, it was literally like they were describing going into the movie Deliverance. They just, you know, had a weekend visit with someone and literally in a backwoods community, but it was like they'd gone to Deliverance for the weekend. And, you know, to realize that vibration, I mean, they were talking about the intensity of the abuse in the family systems and the put downs and the rage and the parental abuse of the children passed on to the children. And I mean, it was just like, whoa, I've almost forgotten that exists. And
you mean the family
was
talking about among themselves about their lives being like that? They
yes.
were actually in that bad shape? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. She was visiting with family members that she didn't have much contact with, hadn't seen in some time, cousins and such. And she was shocked at how it's still, you know, the way that, you know, Uncle Harry used to beat up Aunt Mary.
Yeah.
And how the kids are, you know, doing the same thing now, a generation or two later. And it was kind of shocking for her. And, you know, we talked about, so isn't it awesome that you were able to go in, this woman's been doing work now for several years, that you were able to go in and speak healing into that and be the leavening that helps that to shift and change. You know, I can remember over the years thinking how impactful it was for this physicist Yeshua to give us the idea of critical mass, that when he said a little leavening leavens the whole loaf, and how for me years ago when I looked at, you know, how much violence there is in the world, how much rage and hatred and vengeance, it would have been easy to just give up, but Yeshua gave me like a hook to hang on, hope, and that was, we don't have to get to every violent, vicious mind. All we need to do is get enough people through the gate who literally will actually incarnate their own physiology as active present love and be able to maintain the presence of love or the awareness of themselves as the presence of love as they move through their lives. It's only going to take a small number of people, critical mass, a little leavening, to change the whole game. And to me, that's the hope of it. And this woman was kind of in a sort of a down place about how tragic some of the stories were she was being told. Then when she realized that she was able to speak healing and it was accepted, She was able to speak of love in those contexts, how powerful an influence she had, and that she was leavening, and that her work was worthy and was able to bring a new energy into that community.
That's so good.
It is. We're blessed. Well, any other thoughts for you today, young lady?
Yes and no. Go ahead, Michael. You've got...
No, you go ahead. What do you got going on?
Well, it seems very frivolous in a way, but 2 days ago, my favorite cat was in the walk and talking to me and trying to get comfortable. I got hold of the vet. Turned out it was a surgery problem, but they did have one surgeon there who had just had 2 cancellations in a row and could take him. Well, it was a urinary tract blockage, which can be fatal in a male cat, and he's already been on special food for that. But she put him right under, cleaned him out, fixed him up, kept him overnight to make sure the functions were functioning. And Michael, I feel as if I was hit by a truck. I couldn't get warm. I wasn't anxious that I realized in any way that I've been anxious. I was just exhausted and had to climb in bed just to rally whatever bodily heat was available around. Even drinking something hot didn't do anything. And I was just surprised at how unsturdy I am, you know? So that was one thing. And if you had a comment on that, I'd love to know it. But I was just shocked at what a reaction I had.
Right. Well, if I look at it in context of what you were saying about the cat the other day and your fear of losing it, my offering would be you went into sympathetic dominance, into that fear, flight, fright mode. And when that happens, basically, blood flow is extracted, you know, primarily from the upper part of the body. Except for the arms and the lungs, blood flow is extracted from the brain. It's extracted from the liver. It's extracted from the digestive system, the eliminative system, the internal organs. The blood flow is drained to go into, you know, even though, of course, you weren't going to get up and run or fight somebody, but your body doesn't know that when your mind goes into that sympathetic dominant state. And yes, cold is going to be, that's going to be part of the healing process, part of the state that you went into. And that would be a good place to recognize where you're at and shift your mind out of the fear-based thoughts back into love-based thoughts, so that you can restore that parasympathetic system and get blood flow back to the rest of your body, because that can be pretty chilling.
Yeah. Well, I was functional. I said, Tim, I had to cancel going to the refugees and get that cat over there. And so I drove the cat. And, you know, I did. So I wasn't in complete paralysis. I did the right thing right away. But you're right, though. It must have been a lot of that. Anyway, I spoke to my son about that because he's in crisis situations constantly as a surgeon at the hospital.
Right.
And he comes home at night completely wiped out too many times. He's talking about retiring at age 51, which is very early. But he said, I don't know if I'm going to live doing this kind of stressful. And of course, that means he needs to do some work because he doesn't have to react that way. But I said, do you get cold? And he said, I come home shiveringly cold sometimes and have to get into bed to warm up. So, you know, I was amazed to hear and horrified to hear that he faces this kind of crisis just about every day. Yesterday, he was here till about 10 o'clock, emergency after emergency after emergency, scrubbing in when the scrubbers are gone and the nurses are complaining and the instruments aren't cleaned up and he has to be the chief cook and bottle washer and do the surgery. I'm telling you.
Right. Well, my offering would be strong invitation for him to deal with being able to shift out of sympathetic dominance and bring himself to the crisis as the presence of love in parasympathetic mode, then his physiology will function properly in that circumstance rather than dysfunction, because the fear-based mind has taken over and totally altered the flow of energy in the system.
Yeah. Well, I've been working on him on that. That's only so much a mother can get through with. I know that's what he needs to do. Yeah.
Let me send you the presentation that I did on sympathetic, parasympathetic dominance for the folks at the medical people at Avison. And that might speak to him in recognizing that that's what he's doing to himself, or that's what he's allowing to be resonated, and that he can shift it. I mean, he can walk into the surgery room as total angelic energy in the presence of love, probably be far more effective in his surgery and impact energetically the patient on the table for better outcomes in that regard as well, and leave himself an upstage place rather than downstage.
Well, he manages when he is about to operate, he says a prayer and looks at his hands and asks for God to guide his hands. I've told you that before.
No.
Very, very good. It's like he's total. He says, when I'm actually doing it, I'm completely calm. But then the other stuff kicks in before and after. So you're right. Miraculously, he can get himself there when it's crucial for the patient.
Get centered.
But it's crucial all around. Yeah.
And what's it costing his physiology to be on like that? And if he can do the work, you know, remember, whether you're in sympathetic or parasympathetic dominance has to do with the mind, not the body. The body is the playground for which state you're in, but it's all controlled and done by the mind.
Totally. I know. That's true.
So all the space that he has the ears to listen and is able to move upward another notch.
That would be great. You know,
Michael,
you said you were going to send me a couple of links to something the other day, and they never came through, so beware. I don't know what's wrong with the system, but they didn't.
Okay, I'll call you after the show, and we'll work it out.
Okay, great. Thank you, but carry on. Thanks for listening to that.
All right, blessings. Take care. All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, to anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No. Oh, no, it's all quiet.
Well, great. Well, then let's step back into the conversation we were having with Yeshua about the instruction set that he gave for incarnating as the active presence of love. So the Greeks called it a prayer. And if you remember, the disciples, who obviously must have been confused or didn't understand, they asked for a set of instructions for how to achieve a result called prayer. So get that mindset. In the Aramaic language, the disciples asked for instructions on an achievable result called prayer. The Greeks totally changed the meaning of the word prayer. Remember, Vladimir Lenin, responsible for more deaths on planet Earth than anybody in history? He says the way you destroy a culture is change the meaning of its words. So the word prayer in Aramaic, again, to review, means to set a trap for God, which sounds strange until you recognize that the Aramaic language is a physics language. They understood the physics of the world, that we live in an energy system. And when you translate that, you know, set a trap for God into, I have an antenna on my roof that is a trap for channel two. And when it's oriented properly and aligned properly, I get a perfect picture and sound. So how do I set my trap for channel two properly? You might remember, some of you might remember when we actually did have antennas on the roof and you had a little box over in the corner that you went over and you turned it and the antenna rotated. And, you know, I can remember I was born and raised in an area where we had channel two, channel four, and channel seven coming out of Buffalo, New York. And I can remember that in order to watch channel two, we had to go over and hit the antenna and turn it in one direction. But if we then turned to channel four was garbage. We had to turn the antenna motor and reorient the antenna. And then channel four came in clearly, but channel two was gone. That's a trap. That captures a signal. My offering is that our physiology, this physical device that we call a body-mind unit, and its bony structure is an antenna. It is a trap to capture and reflect into the world that energy in which we live, move, and have our being. And that energy is love. Prayer means to set a trap to capture and reflect love into the world. The disciples didn't know how to do that, so they said, teach us to do that. And what did the Greeks do? The man said, don't repeat and repeat like the pagans. And what happens? Just about every Sunday, what do 32,000 sects of so-called Christianity do? Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth, as though it were an order that they're putting into the cosmic gift catalog. And it's ludicrous when it's seen from the Aramaic perspective. So we went through that yesterday, and I'm going to go ahead and just run through it again as a foundation for where we're going. So here are Yeshua's Aramaic instructions, or an interpretation for us today based on the Aramaic instructions for how to orient your antenna properly. So it starts out with a salutation to the Creator. O eternal Creator, parent to us all, who is in the realms of the unmanifest, teach us to honor, emulate, and serve you. Let your counsel, your wisdom, and your love come alive in us. How does that happen? You've got to set the trap properly. You've got to align yourself properly. Attune us to and empower us to conceive of and understand the will which you have already created for us. In other words, I want to tune to channel two. Teach me how to orient myself so that I capture that which you've already set up and I bring that into and I reflect it into the world. And teach us so that we may give birth to its fruit. And then there's appreciation. That you renew, this is part of aligning yourself properly, that you renew and feed us daily with the presence of your love and the love of each other. And the food that we receive is a gift we gratefully accept. So gratitude is part of the alignment. Appreciation for what we've been given is part of the alignment. People who've got something to whine and complain about every time they turn around can't do this alignment process. Appreciation. Thank you for restoring us to abundance, teaching us to give as you give, and presence love as you are the presence of love for both the just and the unjust. That you forgive from us, that is, remove from us those realities we've engaged in that do us harm and do not belong in our humanness, is another of your blessings we appreciate. recognize that only the Creator can forgive. Scriptures make that very plain. Only the Creator knows how to move the energy that is held in you, that blocks you, that does not belong in you. But you've got a part to play in that. You have free will. If there's something you've decided based in some form of hostility or fear that you really want to keep, that you want to hold on to, that you think is valuable and useful to you, you can say, oh God, take this from me, take this from me, till the cows come home, but your free will never be violated. But, and the forgiveness, the reality management worksheet, the forgiveness process, is how you give permission to the Creator to remove those energetic patterns so that you forgive from those realities we've engaged in that do us harm and do not belong in our humanness is another of your blessings we appreciate. So that energy is part of what blocks us in our ability to capture that energy of hostility or fear that we have somehow misunderstood and valued. The willingness to have it removed and the appreciation that that's even possible is a key part, according to this set of instructions. We commit the responsibility and forgiving as to those painful realities others trigger in us. And I'm going to be taking responsibility and doing our part for the removal of those painful realities that we realize are in us and that others give us the gift of showing to us. When we're tempted to fall out of harmony with your love, that you are here with us, being the space of love, that your love is always present no matter how far we fall, no matter where we go, is a blessing we gratefully accept. That with your grace, you deliver us from our errors, and through your light, part us from darkness. It's another blessing that flows from your divine presence. So, we don't need to be asking the Creator not to lead us into temptation. And this is such a ridiculous, asinine translation. To pretend is a translation of Yeshua's words. So the Creator's going to lead us into temptation. Come on. In fact, it's clearly stated, let no one speak that the Creator leads them into temptation. And yet, many people have been taught to repeat and recite these words over and over and over again. Babbling. We receive each of these gifts with gratitude, appreciation, and praise, sealed in trust, faith, and truth. Amen. Amen. So that would be the instruction set that Yeshua gives when they said, we're confused about this thing called prayer. We know it's not putting our order into the cosmic gift catalog. Teach us to pray. That's what he gave us. Now, you remember in an earlier occasion, we talked about how he said, you must take up your cross and recognize that your cross is whatever you hold in you that prevents you from living in the space this prayer describes. Living that first law. Making a note. So what is it that inhibits you from doing that? What keeps you from literally, as spoken above, bringing your light into the darkness over and over and over again, no matter what's happening in your world. What inhibits you from doing that? That's your forgiveness work. What is the first law? The first law is Rakma, the law that keeps love present in your mind, that allows the entryway of your true created essence into your physiological form. What is it that takes you out of that love? What realities do you hold that, when resonated, break your experience of the presence of love in you? To bear your cross does not mean to suffer through it, but rather to take responsibility for and forgive. Do your part in the forgiveness process. Whatever is in you that removes you from love. My words will guide you where I intended to take you, but first, you have to listen to my meanings. I said 2,000 years ago, I have yet many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. Howbeit, when he, the Spirit of Truth, is come, and actually in Aramaic it's feminine, so it would be she. Spirit of Truth has come. She will guide you in all truths. Remember, Rukh Dukkha is that feminine elemental force that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. And then Yeshua says, I came to connect you with that Spirit of Truth in you, not some outer authority. There's so many issues to be cleared up. And I wish we could address them all at once. Let's look first at the teaching method used by so many of my followers, or so-called followers. You will notice how unlike my method of teaching this fear, terror, and pounding is. In fact, in the framework of my culture, I treated fear as a demon to be cast out. Call John the Beloved reflected well my teaching on fear when he said, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. And yet, when I spoke to this woman who I just shared, had spent the weekend with some distant cousins in backwoods part of the country. Fear, it was actually interesting because what she offered was that the one person who really was the space of love, like one of the most dramatically present spaces of love, was actually the fundamental Baptist preacher. That he had the holy, like he had that presence of love in him. And she was shocked because it was not what she was used to in her Baptist upbringing, which was all hellfire and brimstone. But the one man in the community that was really that space and understood. There is no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear, because love, fear hath torment. So if I have hostility or fear, I block the presence of that which perfects us. I live in a state of blocked truth where the energy of actuality is not allowed to directly enter my form. And if I were to open the barrier, the veil of my temple, then that energy of truth would come in and perfect me, literally process me on an energetic level, undo, dissolve, create a transmutation. You remember we talked about the sun being the transmuting energy for the plant that produces chlorophyll. Being able to be in that presence of active love is what perfects us, unless I'm so skewed by hostility and fear that there's no room for that. Those who teach from fear have not met me and are in desperate need of the protocol I laid out. Well, my reply to him is, well, I was told to fear God. That was a scriptural idea pounded into me. Asho throws his hands up. So much misunderstanding. So many misinterpretations to be dealt with. Fear of God is not a scriptural idea. That idea comes from the fierce and heathen images of their gods and the horrific aspects of the Greek pantheon that are presented as my teaching about the Creator. Recall, the greatest commandment in the law is rachma, or the Creator. In the Greek renderings, where the command to fear God appears, the Aramaic word means have awe, not fear. The Creator is not an angry father figure. That was an hallucination introduced by human minds that had unresolved issues with their fathers. And just go take a look. Go look around at how many men today, and I'm talking about me too, because that all started there for me as well. Issues with fathers. So is it surprising all these raging, angry men who became preachers and stood up there raging in the name of God had taken on the raging energy of their power person? I taught, as written by John, the Creator is love. Listen again to 1 John 4. There is no fear in love, because fear hath torment. If you want to, if you've got still unresolved power person dynamics in you, go and see or rent the movie. You can find it on Amazon. I Can Only Imagine. Very powerful story of a healing between a father and a son. It's a true story. And what you'll notice, you know, the overall theme implies that when this young man broke away from his father and went to church, that's when he healed. But actually, it wasn't until he came back home and experienced the love of his own father, who had started to do his work, that he healed. He'd been through all the churches, and, you know, he was a famous musician. Song, I Can Only Imagine. But when you watch, his healing happens after his father starts to hear about doing inner work, starts to do his own, and he goes back home and he's still in the same pain until his father brings light, brings love to the presence of their relationship. So if that's still an issue for you, it's a powerful film to just take some worksheets and sit and breathe through it. Fear and love cannot be active in the mind at the same time. Just not possible. They are absolutely incompatible frequencies with each other. And that would be just like, you know, I shared with you how I can remember as a kid used to, I remember we had a golden brown box with the dial on it, and we could dial the direction of the antenna. When you tuned in channel 4, 2 was gone. When you tuned in channel 2, 4 was gone. When your mind, when Rachma is set and love is present, fear and hostility can't be active in that mind, and vice versa. The activity, there are three filters, Rachma, fear, hostility, over the frontal lobes of the brain, three filters over the back of the brain, Kuba, fear, hostility. Only one of those can govern the system at a time. Whichever one governs excludes the energy of the other two. The instruction, when they ask Yeshua what's most important in the law, to have Rachma, who's saying, that's number one, that's cause. And so that's a practice to enter into. So again, fear and love cannot be active in the mind at the same time. They're absolutely incompatible with each other. Each is a filter, and only one of those filters can be active at any time. and each one filters out the evidence seen by the other. The evidence shown by a mind when love is active cannot be seen when fear or hostility is active. What fear looks upon cannot even be seen by love, and what love comprehends is invisible to fear. The mind cannot serve two masters. You've been taught to me to look for me. Pardon me. You've been taught to look for me where I do not dwell. You've been taught to look for me in fear-based Greek philosophy, masquerading as religion, which cannot even comprehend, let alone speak of, my true teachings. A mere shadow of my real work shows up in the Greek renderings of my teachings. In my native language, I brought a body of work to be done, not a belief system to be believed in. There are those who would teach you that you're powerless, unable to affect changes in your own life, and that everything lays on my shoulders and that I will do it, everything for you. Have you checked with me to see if that's what I said on that subject? My director said, ye are my friends if you do whatever I command you. You think I said that for nothing? I mean for you to be responsible for your process, not me. There are those who say they represent me, sound like they represent me, and teach you to believe that you are a worthless sinner. If you bought into that, you probably feel helpless about doing anything about your own life. Once again, in Timothy, my teaching on what you're capable of and who you are is perfectly clear. Perfectly represented in the words, for God has not given you a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. I said, verily I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do, he shall do also, greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father. And you too must learn to go unto your Father, your source. Presence of love in you. To believe on me is an Aramaic idiom I used that meant to be living, to follow the method I gave for living your life. It is a method that will place you squarely in, quote, the spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. You've raised at least six major issues in our short time together. And the way these issues are intertwined muddies the waters of the mind. Before we address these issues, let's look at who I am and gain some insight into why understanding the meaning of my words in their original Aramaic context is not just important, but urgent. So I'm going to say thank you all for joining us. We're down to the last minute or so. Delighted that you're here. Please get a link to this when it's finished. If it's made sense to you, listen to it again. Pass it on to someone and have the best year yet of your eternal life.